This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Well, let's look at the week's biggest stories, especially in the political world. Earlier this week, we observed 8 years since the start of Operation Enduring Freedom. Obviously, the mission in Afghanistan launched in the weeks following 9/11 to rout out the Taliban and the al-Qaeda forces that they were harboring in Afghanistan. The early months were a smashing success, but over time, the Taliban has managed to reconstitute itself to some extent. And now the big debate here, John, in Washington, is what will the president do? Will he follow essentially the recommendations of General Stanley McChrystal, or whether he go with a more toned-down strategy, as apparently is being advocated by the likes of Vice President Biden? What do you make of it?
Well, I noticed that White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs was certainly being coy at the briefings, as reporters repeatedly wanted details of the meetings that included the vice president, the president, and General McChrystal, but he wasn't rising to the occasion. It's all confidential. No details go out. Barack Obama is in the proverbial location of between a rock and a hard place. There's no question about it, and analogies are flying like shrapnel about Lyndon Johnson and Vietnam. That said, the president will have to make a decision. We don't know exactly how many more troops General McChrystal has recommended, if any at this point, except the figure that's tossed about the most is 40,000. In addition, the president also knows that in his own party, sentiment is overwhelmingly against more troops and indeed in favor of withdrawal. My guess is we're not going to get an answer soon on this. We're going to get it later rather than sooner. And I think that in the end, Afghanistan will displace Iraq as the major foreign policy dilemma that the United States has to deal with.
John, the significance of the reported rebuke from the president towards General McChrystal for basically making the case for not only additional troops, but making that decision relatively soon in that speech in London last week. Is that a major deal? Do we have a rift here, or is that being blown out of proportion?
Well, the White House certainly doesn't want to comment on it, as you would expect. If the president is going to recommend more troops, he wants everybody on board with him, and the last thing he needs is for General McChrystal to resign and go off speaking about this, as General McClellan left the Lincoln administration during the Civil War and turned into a full-blown opponent to the president at the time. On the other hand, one has to realize this, that this is a sensitive area for the president, that so many Democrats in the past have opted for a stronger U.S. presence in Afghanistan as the alternative to a U.S. presence in Iraq. And now, when the grassroots of the Democratic Party is against it and the president may be for it, we're on some very sensitive ground out there.
John, let's move to domestic issues now. And, of course, we know that next Tuesday the Senate Finance Committee will vote on the Baucus version of health care reform legislation. It got the thumbs up from the Congressional Budget Office for being less than $900 billion. Right now, one of the things we're seeing that's interesting is the likes of former Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole, former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, and Arnold Schwarzenegger saying, hey, Republicans, you need to get on board with this, make this as good as possible. Don't just stand there in opposition to it. What do you make of all that? Why is that happening, and should the current lawmakers listen?
Just a second, Greg. I've read the statements of all three. In fact, Governor Thompson's office sent me his complete statement. And in all of those cases, the Republicans just say the Senate should consider and explore some of the plans that are out there. Senator Frist, former Senator Frist, rather, is very vague about just what he came out for. In fact, Robert Gibbs said at the briefing yesterday, I wish someone would interview him to find out exactly where he stands. Now, there's no question the White House is nudging some of these people, and I'm sure we're going to hear some other Republican names. New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, a former Republican turned independent, has weighed in for some kind of option. But this is in no way, shape, or form a solid endorsement of the Gang of Six plan that's rapidly becoming Max Baucus's Gang of One plan, and certainly not H.R. 3200, the House plan that one has to deal with. I don't think anything will eventually come out of all the health care debate, no matter how long Congress stays in, and estimates now have them staying in through Thanksgiving at this point. I say the plan is still dead on arrival.
John, a couple of lawmakers under the gun, one on each side of Capitol Hill. Let's start in the Senate, where John Ensign, who a number of months ago admitted to an extramarital affair with a former campaign worker who is also the wife of a former very close Senate staffer of his. Now there are allegations, as reported by the New York Times, that Ensign did not wait the appropriate amount of time before trying to get clients for his former staffer after everything went south. There's an ethics investigation. Some say criminal charges could be on the way. How serious is this? What's the political shelf life for Senator Ensign?
Well, his colleagues certainly think so. One senator told me that it looks pretty bad for him, and some of the hurt is going to spill over on the senator who was closest to him, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and Minority Whip John Kyle have pointedly refused to defend John Ensign, other beyond saying he remains senator at this point. I thought originally that John Ensign would survive, his defense being, of course, that standards are different in Las Vegas regarding adultery and the fact that he's not up for election until 2012. But that said, Greg, when one talks about criminal behavior and violation of ethics laws, one senses past senators who got into this and were out sooner rather than later. For now, he's going to say he's staying in, but on the other hand, colleagues are not likely to defend him at this point. I'm not sure Ensign can survive after all now.
Over to the House side now, and Charlie Rangel, the long-serving New York Democrat, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, has been in Congress for almost 40 years.
Right.
And, of course, we've learned over the last couple of years, and certainly over the last few months, about an ever-growing list of tax problems and failure to report income from the chairman who writes the tax laws in Congress. Just on Wednesday, there was an effort led by Texas Congressman John Carter, a Republican, to strip Rangel of that chairmanship. It was basically beat down on a party line vote, although a couple of Democrats did vote for the resolution. So is Rangel strong in that position, or is the wall crumbling?
All right, this is the fourth attempt to either censure Charlie Rangel or remove him from the chairman of the tax writing panel in the House, the Ways and Means Committee, in 16 months. And each time, the support for some kind of punishment of Chairman Rangel grows. In this case, two Democrats voted with the Republicans, and six Republicans voted with the Democrats against it. 19 voted present, meaning they didn't want to take a stand. The Republicans are not just going to say, okay, let's wait till what happens. Although there's a full-blown ethics committee investigation, they're going to pursue it. And my guess is, in the end, it's not going to be a pretty result for Charles Rangel, and even some of his defenders may have to finally turn on him. Also, remember something. He won his seat in 1970 over another scandal-tarred veteran incumbent, Adam Clayton Powell, and is very likely to face a challenge next year from the congressman's son, also named Adam Clayton Powell.
Well, that's certainly an interesting bookend potentially to the Rangel term in Congress. And, John, before we let you go, well, we won't get your official predictions until we're closer to Election Day, but in an odd-numbered year like this, a couple of governor's races getting most of the political attention in terms of campaigns, tight races in both Virginia and New Jersey, both held by Democrats. It's an open race in Virginia, as it always is. In New Jersey, Democrat John Corzine running for re-election. The Republicans have high hopes in both. Which way do you see the momentum heading?
Well, certainly in Virginia, the momentum is going with the Republican at this point. Doug Wilder, the former Democratic governor, recently indicated his preference for Republican candidate Bob McDonnell. And the Washington Post criticized Democrat Cree Deeds for running a lackluster campaign and standing for very little. In New Jersey, my guess is that John Corzine, the embattled Democratic governor, has just raised taxes too much and increased the size of government too much that people are going to say enough. New Jersey is increasingly a Democratic state, but they've been known to elect Republican governors when the Democrats are asleep at the fiscal switch. My guess would be that Chris Christie, who's led in 40 polls since he won the Republican primary, will be the next governor.
John, we'll keep looking. And again, in a couple of weeks, we'll get your final predictions on those key races between McDonnell and Deeds and Corzine and Christie. Thanks so much, as always, for being with us.
As I look forward with a little bit of trepidation toward predicting elections once again, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.